And now it's time for the Johnny Otis Show. Johnny Otis. Johnny Otis. Johnny Otis. Johnny Otis.
Johnny Otis. Johnny Otis. Johnny Otis. Johnny Otis. Johnny Otis. Johnny Otis.
Hi, everyone. This is Johnny Otis, and that means it's time to rock. Yes, and it's time to roll. And we're gonna get way back in the alley with the blues.
You should be with us down here at the Red Hut. We're rocking and rolling and spinning records and enjoying this fine Red Hut food. You know, you can drive in and have something to eat right in your car. We've got curb service, or you can come on in. And if you do, don't forget to holler hello at me. I'll be right here in the window spinning them. That's the Red Hut Broiler, 3101 Southwestern Avenue. And right now, get me a room tonight. Right now, Lula Reed. We remember Lula Reed when she was a little bobby soxer around Toledo. She used to come up and request her little numbers. And now she's a big girl and a big star in her own right. And we go to her dances and request her numbers. In fact, we're going to spin one on our show right now. Bump on the log, Lula Reed.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the internet with me, William English. Today sees a welcome return visit from the phenomenon known as Blind Date Parks. As a student in Leicester, Blind Date, or Bob, carried a 15-foot no parking sign on his head for 2 weeks before pursuing a checkered career, including performance artist, painter, auctioneer's assistant, film extra in Martin Scorsese's New York, New York, appearances on The Gong Show, recording artist, notably on his own LP, The R&B Feeling, on the Junior Aspirin label. If you look at Bob Parks on YouTube, you can see him perform naked, apart from a thick coat of bright yellow paint, in his adopted persona of Big Nose, seemingly having a fit on the floor before singing a gospel song. He features in a film by Nathaniel Mellers and Marcus Werner Head. And we are joined in the studio today by cameraman Chris. As usual, Bob is accompanied by the Recreationals, who today consist of Blind Date Parks on piano and vocals, Scott Rimmington on guitar, Alf Goudenay on bass, Andy on drums, and Waltzing Orchid on harmonica. Today, Bob Parks pays tribute to the legendary Johnny Otis, whose funeral he attended recently in Los Angeles, and we will be playing some vintage 1950s broadcasts from the Johnny Otis Show. Well, welcome, Bob. Thank you very much for coming in.
Hi, everyone on Radioland. This is Blind Date Parks and the Recreationals here to entertain you. You just heard the opening tribute to the godfather of rhythm and blues, who died recently at 90. We're kicking off the session with a rap. Just listen to his wife. Then a pre-recorded piece where I collage clown shoes and soulful dress with a voiceover. This is followed by Roy Campbell's translation of St. John of the Cross's Lucky Chance, set to an 8-bar blues. Then some chatting with William about a documentary I'm having made of my life right now, produced by Nathaniel Mellors and directed by Marcus Berner Head. And one of his colleagues is in the studio right now filming for the documentary. An ongoing report on my crucifixion project and some insight into the birth of art in LA 1945-80. Plus, Johnny's eulogy at his celebration. We'll be rounding off this session with the Deep Blues, two Howlin' Wolf tunes, climaxing with Scott's recreation of the greatest guitar solo ever, Hubert Sumlin's break in You'll Be Mine. So here goes, just listen to his wife. Nobody near who could begin to cheer him on his way, cause he's the greatest spot who's ever held the cross of rhythm and blues. Up hard, we get it said. Hear it, say it, do it. Johnny Otis is a king, and if we're out on a limb, we can come back into ourselves once more out here on the dance floor. It's finally brings to life, just listen to his life. Doing the pre-recorded bit now.
Clown shoes.
He's still working it out. I'm falling in love with you. And next time we meet, I want to kiss your lips. Getting down on the dance floor, I couldn't help looking up and noticing your pretty body. Soulful dress. Sugar pie DeSanto, from knees to waist, unbelievably almond. Mobile phone rings. First time. It couldn't be Mum, could it? She's only in the next room. Apparently, when I went to give her a hug in bed last night after choir practice, I must have fallen on her and hurt her shoulder. I'll just go and put those clown shoes on.
For all the beauty life has got, I'll never throw myself away, save for one thing, I know not what, which lucky chance may bring my way. For a thing I know not what, which lucky chance may prove my way. The gentleman's heart upon his quest will never falter nor go slow, and pushes on and goes to rest wherever it's most hard to go. It runs ahead and wearies not, but upholds its risen box. But it adores I know not what. It can be won by lucky chance. That all the pleasure he has lost, like one who with a fever heart has proved. only look at scars. But pray for that, I know not what that is achieved by lucky chance. Do not amaze yourself at this. That pleasure is of earthly things, that cause from which most evil springs, and most the enemy of bliss. And so creatures earth begot begin to turn their glass and seek a thing, I know not what, which may be won by lucky chance. For once the will has felt the head of the divine upon its head, it never ceases to demand. Divinity must pay the debt, but since its loveliness to scan, only true faith may steal a glance. It rips it out as best it can by risking on a lucky chance. This world of love so high elated, tell me if you would find great harm if the servants he created did not rival him for charm. Alone without face, form or feature, put all the prompt you would advance. To love that thing, I know no what beyond the creatures can be won by lucky chance. Which is or ever was begot, to vie with that I know not what, which may be won by lucky chance. The man who strains for wealth and rank employs more care and wastes more health for riches that elude his stealth than those he's hoarded in the bank. But I, my love, do force you to advance. The lonely wrath is my lonely lot over something I know not what, which may be what found by lucky chance. For that which by the senses down here is comprehended as our good, and all that can be understood, although it soars sublime and cheer. For all the beauty can in heart I'll never lose my happy lot, only for that I know not what, which lucky chance can be won by. That's it, right now.
And it's time to talk about Charles Limited, men's clothiers at 752 South Broadway, where the customer is king. Men, if you're interested in fine suits, sport coats, shirts, or ties, as every well-groomed man is, then you'd better see my man. And when I say my man, I mean Mr. Charles of Charles Limited at 725 South Broadway. Now, as soon as you do this, you've got a real surprise coming. To begin with, you're not going to get that old super sales routine or high-pressure jive that you've experienced elsewhere. Charles and his staff are interested in passing on to you certain information and knowledge that you probably aren't familiar with. Charles knows that thus armed with the information and knowledge he gives you, that when you're ready to buy, you'll be back. You've got to come back, because then you'll know that you can't meet, let alone beat, a Charles value anywhere. Now prepare yourself for another surprise. When you see these Charles Limited creations, when you actually gaze at those fabulous fabrics executed in perfectly conceived style, you're going to blow your natural top. All fitting and measuring is done on the amazing new Charles Scope, a new tailoring innovation so novel it defies description. That address again is 725 South Broadway. That's Charles Limited, 725 South Broadway. Oh yeah, and if you get down there soon and tell Charles Johnny sent you, you'll get a beautiful gift absolutely free. That's right, a free gift. Just mention my name. That's Charles Limited, where the customer is king.
For the past hour, you've been listening to Johnny Otis, direct from Scrivener's Red Hut Broiler at the corner of 31st and Western in Los Angeles. Tune in again tomorrow evening at 7 for more Rhythm and Blues.
Well, Bob.
Okay, now let me just read the eulogy at the celebration of his life a couple of weeks back in at the Musicians' Union on Vine Street, and this is it. Reflections of a Man and His Soul. Our recently departed brother Johnny Otis, who was passionate in advancing the cause of justice and peace, will continue to make an impact through his many musical and artistic achievements. Some of Johnny's earliest experiences with African Americans took place in Berkeley, California.
There, he became aware of the disturbing white racist attitudes against his black childhood friends. He decided then and there to become black himself and defend his adopted brothers and sisters. Johnny Otis earned the name the Godfather of Rhythm and Blues because he discovered and nurtured the talents of many R&B recording stars. He also defended African-American recording artists who were being cheated out of their rightful royalties. Hundreds of millions of dollars they earned were stolen from them. Through his multiplicity of talents, Johnny continuously fought racism. Johnny was not nationalistic. He never advocated allegiance to any nation or religion. In his eyes, all people, nations and religions were equal. Johnny Otis strongly believed that one could only gain respect by showing resolve, strength and unity, especially in the continuing struggle for freedom. He was a warrior in the wars against bigotry, racism and ignorance. Through his impressionistic works of art, sculptures, cartoons, books, newspaper columns, and above all his music, he would make light of the enmities that exist among people. Johnny's weapons in his secret arsenal were his pen and paintbrush. He envisaged that he could open up minds by expanding the vistas of understanding. He would often preach that the main ingredients for achieving freedom is self-respect. Johnny's most revered hero in American history was Nat Turner, who attempted to free his fellow slaves. When you and your family are held in bondage, Otis would argue, then you not only have the right, but you also have the duty to protect your God-given rights. While witnessing the Watts Uprising in 1965, Johnny remembered some of the words to an old gospel song, "Listen to the Lambs." Johnny thought about it during the riot. They wouldn't listen to the lambs. The lambs cried, and finally one day, the lambs turned into lions. This is a message that Johnny Otis wished to convey to the world. Peacefully eradicating racism from the planet Earth is Johnny's enduring legacy. His visions of how to bring this about will serve mankind for many years to come.
Okay, well, thank you, Bob. How did your... You attended the funeral of Johnny Otis.
Yeah.
Was that by... That was by chance, though, wasn't it? You were kind of going over there for some other reason.
I'm having a documentary made about my life, as I mentioned, Nathaniel Mellers and Werner...
Marcus Werner Head.
Doing, and he flew out for 5 days. And my motivation initially was to go to Los Angeles because Getty had put up $10 million to initiate a sort of rebirth of Los Angeles or a discovery of Los Angeles as an art center from 1945 to 1980. And so I had the whole... It was spun out over a six-month period, and all the major museums down from San Diego up to Santa Barbara were showing at that time. And I caught quite a few of them. And I did a performance. I had a performance group when I was living in Los Angeles in the 70s. John Duncan, who notoriously had sex with the dead woman from Tijuana and sort of... Anyhow, hi, John, if you're listening. He said it.
Right.
And that was the point at which Chris Burden actually... backed out of his scary stuff.
Was that the performance artist who had himself shot in the arm or something?
No, he was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, what I want to do here is just give a roll call of some of the great artists. They're just names, but I like all of these, and there's so many more, and they just don't get... they don't get publicity over here for all sorts of reasons. Because I do believe that New York, Paris school, a bit, you know... bit too European-y, really. And the real frontier spirit is in the Far West, actually. And the stuff is so sort of unclassifiable that it doesn't get exhibited because the, what do they call them? Curators can't get their heads around. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not saying that because I'm going to mess
that's
myself
all right.
up. So okay, I didn't say that. Now,
start the roll call.
I'll start the roll call. Right. Three places. Somebody noticed that it really came out of art schools. But the first place to attract a lot of people was the Ferris Gallery. It's from 58 to 66. Here we go. John Altoon, Larry Bell, Wallace Behrman, Lynn Fuchs. I love his work. Robert Irwin, Craig Kaufman, Ed Moses, John Mason, who was really influential, Ken Price, Ed Ruscha, Billy L. Bengtson, Ed Keenholtz. That's what's known as the Call School. And this is, I've done this trichotomy, which I'll read it out later, a diagram. Okay, here we come on to Irvine, which was a new campus. And they had nowhere out in there in Orange County, and there was literally nowhere for them to have exhibition space or anything, so it had to be conceptual. And the big influence, again, was Robert Irwin, who's... But I just want to say one other big influential figure was Peter Volkers, who did these... started really opening clay work. Yeah. Here's my roll call for Irvine. Robert Irwin, Craig Kaufman, I'm going to repeat a few here, John Mason, John McCracken, Baya Selmins, Ed Burial, Black, Ed Moses, Larry Bell, another favourite of mine, Joe Good, Billy L. Bengtson, who I saw him talking with John Mason and John Baldessari, actually, the second time I went out, and he knew Johnny Otis, so that was a connection. There's the F Space Gallery, which is where Chris Burden got shot. There's Michael Asher, who did the very, very, very famous installation at Pomona College. Nancy Buchanan, Barbara Smith, who I know, and she put me in touch with John Duncan. Richard Newton, Alexis Smith. Now we come on to Pomona, which is kind of, again, in Orange County. And this is where the famous installation with Michael Asher that makes all the art books happen. This is 69 to 73. In 73, the whole of the fine art department walked out en masse.
Why?
Judy Chicago, Ron Cooper.
Why did they walk out, Bob?
Ah, they were getting... What do they call it now when you change, modify your aims and objectives?
Revise?
Revise, yeah.
But what do you mean? The whole art department walked out...
Yeah, they were messing them up. They were... particularly Robert Irwin... They were encouraging people to be individuals, not clones of themselves. So who they spawned were totally individualistic, and something came in to sort of regiment that a little bit, and it restricted their whole style. So it's the first time I think it's happened, the whole of the...
So they were in favour of a sort of collectivist approach?
Yeah, a facilitative approach,
right,
where the pupils were on a par. They were, we don't use the word artist anymore because with Malevich that stopped being used.
So. Right.
Anti-artist, okay, or something like that, yeah. Where they were, well, they were equals, they were colleagues anyhow, so they were. So Bastian Alder, who set out across the Atlantic in his boat and never made it to the other side, John Baldessari, Alan Rappersberg, Wolfgang Stürkel, William Wegman, Malden Barden, who was Burden's teacher. I've forgotten the word for it now, but he made these sort of things that force your body through different shapes. And Terrell, of course. Okay, now I'm going to have to mention some others. There's ASCO, which is the Chicano component. ASCO is kind of the Chicano word for Dada. There's Harry Gamboa Jr., Gronk, Willie F. Heron. Now, there's Oscar Castillo did a lot of photographs. I knew Luis Valdez. He had El Teatro Campesino. Artists like Siqueiros Orozco. But the main thing was the gangster, the gangs in L.A. Now, the East Coast gangs, they're... graffiti is personal, whereas the West Coast gangs, they're delegated. There's a script person who does the and I think it's the old Aztec glyphs that they use, actually. Anyhow, I've just found this out. It's imagine a three, then rotate that 180 degrees, and you've got the gangster E, and that is, you see that, and it makes a lot of sense. White Fence Gang and all that kind of stuff.
So when was this done?
Early 70s it started, okay, really. And then, you know, everyone started imitating it, and all my kids at school in the 90s started imitating it, and they usually get it wrong. So that's another aspect. I'm going to come back to this, so I'm just going to carry on the roll call, then I'll be through with this. There's another show, L.A. Raw. It's a figurative tradition. You've got Rico Lebrun, Howard Warshaw, Charles White, Arnold Menches, James Strombone, Joyce Tremaine, Roberto Chavez, Edmund Teske, David Hammonds, John Outerbridge. Now, Phyllis, Johnny Otis's wife, gave me a connection with John, so I'm trying to get in touch with him. And Tom Reed, who was a DJ on KGFJ, which was a black soul station. And he's written a book, The History of Black Music in LA, which I've sent my international money order over for.
Right.
A copy of that. Habs Burkhart, Judith Backer, Kim Jones, who has all the things sticking out. Barbara T. Smith again, and then Paul McCarthy, who was he thought I was naive because John and he opened Close Radio, and they did a broadcast with Close, and he invited Paul over, and he thought I was naive, so he wouldn't join. We called it Group A. Now there's a show up in Santa Barbara, which is 51 to 69, the LA art scene. So we got some other people and influences, people like Carl Appel, the Cobra Group, Carl Benjamin. Mm-hmm. This is going back, and you've got who's that? Lawson Feitelson, Richard D. Bacorn, Sam Francis, Philip Guston was even living in LA. Helen Lundenberg, Motherwell was Lee Mulliken, Larry Rivers, another New York artist who was very influential. Mark Toby, June Wayne. Then I missed out because they didn't fit into any things, and I'll get these: George Herms, Robert Graham with the little realistic models, Newton Harrison, Doug Wheeler, Ron Davis, who's just right up there with Craig Kaufman in my books, Terry Schoonhoven, who's from the LA Art Squad, Nauman, Pettibone, and Richard Jackson, who came around my house, actually, came around, mm-hmm. Barrow Smith's boarding around, Tony DeLapp, Jamie Lee Bryers, Laddie John Deal, who does the work with cement and glass on canvas, and that's about that. That's all of those.
Right.
Right, now...
Is that the roll call?
That's the roll
call. Okay. But what about Johnny Otis? You started by talking about you were going over there to do what with Johnny Otis?
I was going over... Because of this documentary, we were going to go over and... Miriam, am I talking slowly enough? She said in the phone that I have to talk slowly, and just checking, I'm trying to talk slowly. And because people in other countries, you get too excited... And they won't understand what you're saying. I'm trying to...
Who are you talking to?
Miriam.
Where is she?
In Santa Fe. No, she's not. It's in Puerto Rico.
Right.
But that...
Okay.
Hi, Christine, as well. And hi, Mum. And Tom, if you're listening. Don't stop me.
Okay. So, Johnny Otis, you went
yeah.
to...
I was going out there this film at the different locations in the museums, and then we were going to stop by his place to have a word. Now, Johnny Otis reckons that rhythm and blues came out of the swing bands, Jimmy Lunceford and like that, in the late 40s. He played drums with Lester Young, actually, in the early 40s. Mm. And Jerry Wexler, Tom Reed, says, oh, no, he doesn't have it. I forgot the story about him. James Brown, Little Richard and Lou Rolls. This is Bunce Blackwell told me. That's Little Richard's manager. Yeah. Started out in Macon, Georgia.
Right.
It was a gospel trio and they weren't good enough, so they went secular. But that's beside the point.
Right, right. And he had a big hit over here, didn't he, with Ma, He's Making Eyes at Me.
Yeah, we couldn't get that one.
No.
I remember that.
But and his big hit over there was the Hand Jive.
William the Hand Jive. And his, which, more than that, his television appearances. He had, I think, from the late 50s into the 60s of Johnny Otis' show.
But I played the Hand Jive, and it sounds to me very similar to Bo Diddley.
That's his beat, yeah. He took his beat. Yeah.
So he take it from Bo Diddley?
Of course.
And right.
Mississippi.
So do you think, in some senses, do you think he was a sort of popularizer of trends that already existed over there? Or?
Absolutely. He was a facilitator.
Right.
He was the conduit.
Right.
I mean, pretty much everyone at the funeral or at the celebration, the roll call was just like everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, literally everybody, somehow he had links with.
Yeah. And, so his role in rock and roll was basically to bring it to the media.
Was bringing the black element.
And,
you know, the way that they've literally been ripped off and that white people have ended up with all the money and all the fame and black people still haven't received the credit that's due to them. And anyway, it's not even black people's, it's of the world. But the black people... This is the threefold thing. This is my thing.
So Bob's now picked up a sort of a diagram which looks like it's a triangle.
It's a trichotomy.
Surrounded by circles and three arrows.
Right, this is what I worked out on this trip. You've got the cool school who have a phenomenological approach to perceptual psychology. Now, they can't go off, you don't mention the word spirituality to them because they'll, fun. So this is fun. They know what fun is, okay. Then you've got the black ascetic, which is process-oriented approach to spirituality. So don't mention fun to black folks in LA, spirituality, because you can't get off the word, whereas you can't hit the word with the other one. And then you've got the Chicano folk tradition. That's a Stalinist approach, this is my word, to spirituality, because you've got all the... Anyhow, this is the thing. Malevich, in about 1911-12, Shukin had collected Matisse and Picasso, and it was available in Moscow. And Malevich said, this has great staying power, but it lacks spirituality. And he went back to, I think there was a colony in Branstovo with Larionov and Goncharova and all those people. And in 7 or 8 years, from figurative art, abstraction came from the folk tradition. So, as an element, and this is what I'm putting forward, is that this period in Los Angeles was a re-injection of vitality, or fun, if you want to be called, or spirituality, if you want to be black, into modernism. Gave it a rebirth, basically. So you've had the Malevich period, and you've had the LA period. This is, and I call this, the overriding title is the psychogeographical R&B sound space of LA. Now, there are polarities within it, which is, I won't get into that. But wait a minute, I made a note. One other element, and let me tell you one other element. I talked about on the last show how I was had done this big 13-foot by 7-foot-6 encaustic crucifixion. And they wouldn't let me show it at the local church in the village in Sway because the colours were too bright. So I got a composer, Ivan Moody, to commission. And he liked the piece. He's an often performed composer, and he liked it, and I've had a senior moment.
Shall I play an advert?
Where am I?
I could play an advert gather your thoughts. This is from the Johnny Otis Show.
House parties can be fun, or they can be chaos, friends. Do notify police immediately if trouble is expected, and do have outside of house well-lighted before, during, and after the party. Do hire special police whenever possible when having a large party at home or at an agency, and do call existing youth-serving agencies to assist you in planning a house party. Do not allow teenagers to stand around outside of the house before, during, or after the party, and do not admit uninvited guests or party crashers. Do not let teenagers handle party crashers, intoxicated persons, or fights. That lets you out, Lonnie Roshan. And do not invite more persons than the house will safely hold.
I'm not getting my pauses right.
So you are. Don't worry about it.
All right, okay. Right, we're going into Smokestack Lightning. We'll do that now.
All right.
See you, Scott.
Yeah. Great show. I say don't forget, kind of silly. How can you forget? It's the 5-4 ballroom, 5409 South Broadway, downtown Los Angeles. It's Johnny Otis tonight with our special guest, Marie Adams. She'll be here again tomorrow night. Of course, Johnny Otis too. Now, this is Billy Bird, thanking you again. Don't forget, we'll be back again on the air tomorrow night, same time, same station. Be with us then, won't you? Or better still, come in the ballroom between 9 and 2.
Now this is Billy Bragg.
Something I heard on Radio 4 this morning, actually. And it was apparently E.O. Wilson. I followed him all the way through from the 70s with sociobiology. And he was really hounded at the time when he came up with, I think, the insect colonies, I think it was called. But he's put in, lauded now, but he's come out with a new controversial book, The Social Conquest of the Earth. And it says that his original idea, roughly, I haven't got the, it hasn't been published yet, but in the interview he said that altruism, how does that get genetically encoded and passed on? He argues the case, I can't remember all the stuff now, but it was linked with kinship. But now he said it's not, it's a social phenomenon, so it's much broader, which has implications for what the Cholos are doing as opposed to the East Coast ones, that they might be closer to tapping some sources of creativity. Because he said roughly that I think it's over 14 or 15 generation culture is genetically repeated, mm-hmm. and that was one of the claims. Anyhow, so the point was with Ivan Moody, I met him at a Schnitker conference at wherever that place is that produced the Brat Pack, and what's it? Goldsmiths.
Oh, the YBAs.
The YBAs.
Right.
And roughly, he was, him and, what's her name? Oh, I can't think of her name.
Who is it?
The
give
Russian.
Us a, give us a clue.
Galina Ospolskaya.
Oh, right.
Anyhow, they're both proteges of Shostakovich. And so Schnitker believed in sort of collaging, like, get a bit of Mozart, a bit of Brahms, and collage them in per se, and with all the giggly-biggly in between. And he, so this was my proposition for the commission, which, I mean, I've got the money for the commission, but I've got to, maybe the documentary, I'll be able to get some publicity and raise some funds or something like that, some support for it, because that's the next stage you get acquired. I've got a location, Canvey Island, a church there, to put it on. I've got an architect, I've got a sound engineer in Berlin, and I've got a
tell us about Canvey Island, because it wasn't that last number you did something to do with Lee Brillo?
Yeah, he did it on the
Dr. Field
Confidential.
Right.
He included that in his act. Yeah, Canvey Island is the British soul home. It's the Thames Delta, the English home of rhythm and blues, as far as I'm concerned.
But you go there regularly, don't you, to some...
Well, like my mum started going in 1926, I think, 27.
Oh, really?
And then she's been going. It's was had a notorious name with the EastEnders during the Second World War.
Oh, yeah?
Because it's the closest seaside resort to London.
Yeah.
And it's the last vestige of the Cockney aesthetic, actually.
But right.
Just let me finish this point, because otherwise I won't get in. It's the one I want to push this in. Is that, as the bishop said to the actress, right? I've gone off the subject.
You've lost
I've
it again.
Other senior moment, folks. Right, now I'm going to get there.
I don't know where you are.
Ivan Moody, and he. So I met up with him, and he's. Schnitker. So instead of Mozart or Brahms, I want him to do an R&B riff. Da 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 So it'll actually get highlighted because it will... Well, anyhow, I won't even talk about it. So what he then was saying, because this thing with...
is this Ivan Moody we're talking about?
Yeah, back, right. And Greek Orthodox. And with Malevich was the thing... I saw a little suprematist drawing of his at the Peggy Guggenheim collection in the 60s. And it was just a little drawing, and it had a terrific power. And he became my main man. And I wondered what that was. And later on, I figured he sequestered the whole Russian Orthodox tradition. And I thought, one minute, Mervyn Bragg's show, he was talking about metempsychosis, which is a transmigration of souls. And I thought, well, if he's got that, he's got the whole stuff, and he's got that too. And that's when I had to draw back. Now, I'm going to mention my tutor from Leicester, and we're both from Leicester, me and William.
Yeah.
And there was a thing... In LA at that time, there was a thing in Leicester
Oh, right. In the 60s.
You could be right.
Yes. Yeah, we'll hit upon that at the future when I reflect on it.
Okay.
Okay, is that all right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Anyway, Ken was my tutor. Anyhow, he, when I said this, because this idea, I start going off at a thing, I thought, well, right, because I've been into rhythm and blues and all that, through the colour, the sound will release colour energies. And he said, that sounds like Arts Council twaddle. And I was completely devastated, really, because that was my whole thesis. Anyhow, what Ivan has said about, and I can, it's all right to talk about this because I've asked him, because he's got a new book coming out, and he said, I'm not venturing into that area because it's not yet been published. But this is an area that, what I was claiming, that ironically, Christian Orthodoxy is bearing the chalice of modernism. It's by a really weird thing. It's by Anne Bradstreet. It's because it's the only nobody else wants it, basically. Mm. And so they got. Anyhow, no. That kind of, but he said, what you can claim is that there was a phenomenon of the meeting of these two, was particularly the Russian time. And this is the LA thing's my own thing. It might be baloney, but. That produced something extremely exciting, and it's completely unresearched, the whole territory, and it's the area that I'm looking in. Now, how that this plays into this diagram, and then I'm finished with that, and then we can just do normal talking, is how is I think there is a balance here with the black aesthetic, like the cool school. Where do they get that nihilism from? When, like, a you have Ad Reinhardt black canvas, but if you have one in Los Angeles, from the West Coast one, it speaks a different language. I think that is essentially the gospel, the spiritual, the black gospel is giving it the nihilism.
But Rodchenko did a black canvas as well, didn't he? Black on black.
Yeah, but he was a constructivist.
Yeah, but that's another example of a black canvas with a completely different interpretation.
So. Yeah, yeah, he went into photography and kind of, he wasn't, there was a big thing between the supremacists.
Does he not fit into this?
No.
All right.
He did until he went off.
All right.
This is, what's her name? Camilla Gray's The Great Experiment, which we all were brought up on.
Yeah, yeah.
And apparently, what's his name's son? Prokofiev's son married Camilla Gray.
Oh, right.
And, anyway. Now, just to complete it, is that it's rhythm and blues. That's what's underpinning the cool school. That's what gives it its cool. That's why they can stay cool, because they've got rhythm and blues bearing in their
ears.
So
is this the link now with Johnny Otis? This is what brings
this it. This is where it all brings it. So these three areas that I've interested, this is how they're beginning to sort of come together.
Right.
That's about it. I've said as many things as I want to say now.
But the funeral must have been fascinating, Bob. I mean, didn't Shuggy Otis play or something?
Yeah, Shuggy Otis played. It was. I got a photograph of him and his son, so it's three generations.
Right.
And I saw Johnny's manager.
Right.
I sent him a copy of my LP.
Yeah.
And I sent John
which Alton is
the rhythm and blues R&B feeling, which Nathaniel Mellers produced. And
right.
His
and what's your connection with Nathaniel Mellers? He's an artist, isn't he, who makes films?
Hi, Robin. This is at Leicester College of Art.
Robin Klasnick
was in the year above me, but same age.
So what's the gallery? I've forgotten.
Matt's
gallery in the East End.
And
okay.
And Nathaniel was one of his artists. Now, in Sway, I had my brother's girlfriend, when he had a nervous breakdown, and she had a nervous breakdown as well, Linda Fredericks, met in Isleworth Hospital. And later, I was a postman in Sway, and I was delivering, and I said, I know that person. It was Linda. And she then I was teaching at local school, Armwood, and I did some artist in residence. And then when she retired, she raised £500,000 from the National Lottery and opened Art Sway.
Right.
And I don't know what the connection, but somehow Robin made a connection with Art Sway. And
Robin Klasnick's from Leicester as well. Did we say that?
I didn't know that.
Did we not? Is that not the case? I thought that's how you knew him.
No. Leicester College of Art, where he was a student there.
Well, that's
from
what
Leicester.
I mean.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant from Leicester, like you were born.
No, but you met him in Leicester.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So that's another connection with Leicester.
Was it the second richest town in Europe in the
last century? Apparently, it was due to manufacturing.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Anyhow, back to just to round that off. Robin then came, and Nathaniel somehow got a show at Art's Way. And I did a little thing in one of the films because they put me, out of sympathy, they put my name forward. I'd had a show there.
Yeah.
And I invited him to come around the bungalow, and he saw me out and he raved, and he gave me his
gallerist in Amsterdam, and I had a show there. And if you look on the website, Big Nose, Bob Parks, you can see my performance.
Yeah, covered in yellow paint.
Yellow paint.
Yeah. What was the story about your father? You said you told me something about your father.
I'm going to keep that a secret, because that's going to be... I don't want to say about that.
Okay. All right.
I'll hold that one back at this point. Okay.
Fair enough.
Is that all right?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Yeah, it's up to you.
And
that's
all the big stuff I've covered now.
Yeah. Shall I finish off with another Johnny Otis track?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Bob. Bob, Blind Date Parks today, aren't you?
It is.
Why are you Blind Date Parks?
Well, it was at the Acoustic Blues. We're talking about blind lemon, Jefferson, and I thought of another fruit, date.
Right.
So Blind Date Parks. That was
All right. So it's Bob Parks and the Recreationals. Your what?
Blind Date, not Bob Parks. Blind Date.
Blind Date Parks and the Recreationals for today.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Bob, and the Recreationals for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
And playing your tribute to Johnny Otis, amongst other things.
Yeah.
And
don't forget Solomon Burke as well, who died very recently.
Okay. Well, we'll wrap up with another Johnny Otis track then from the 1950s.
Yeah. Is it going to be the Serenade? Harlem.
Well, we might have time for both, but I just thought I'd play.
The old theme song, friends. That means it's time to wrap it up. We'll be back again with you next Monday at 8:30. They're right here on Channel 5. And until then, kind of a little reminder. See you tonight at the Crescendo on the Sunset Strip. Tomorrow night out at the Rag Doll, where we have a ball. And Thursday night, the nightlife in Los Angeles, formerly the Club Oasis. And this weekend, we'll be up in Sacramento, San Jose, Fresno, Oakland, and San Francisco. But right now, the clock on the wall says it's time to say... bye-bye, baby. Until we meet again. Bye-bye, baby. Until we meet again.
Join us again next Monday here on KTLA when Metropolitan Ford at Pico and Figueroa in downtown Los Angeles presents the Johnny Otis Show. Special guests this evening, the Penguins. Johnny Otis Show has come to you live from Hollywood and is a Hal Zeiger worldwide production. This is Walt Abbott speaking.
This is Maury Wills, and I'm 100% for the election of Johnny Otis.
Say, are you a politician?
No, I'm a shortstop for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
You think everyone should vote for Johnny Otis?
Yes, I do, because I know Johnny Otis is a man who will fight for civil rights, promote the welfare of our youth, and attack the narcotics problem.
You're right about that, and I know he's a good family man and believes in real democracy for all people.
That's the truth, and baseball is in the game of life. Good sportsmanship and fair play are important. That's why I say, vote for my friend Johnny Otis, June 7th.
And everybody who lives in Southern California knows you've got to have a dependable car. And whether you want a wonderful new Ford or a fine used car, Metropolitan Ford in downtown L.A. is the place to get it. And say, I'd appreciate it very much if you'd listen carefully while my good friend Bill Griffiths explains why Metropolitan is the best place to get that car you need. Billy Boy.
Thank you very much, Johnny. Real nice to be here again tonight. And, you know, you must have an awful lot of people watching the show because they just all came in this past weekend. It was wonderful.
Not all. There are still some out there, and I want them all to go down this week.
All right. Let's try it this week. Okay, thanks, Johnny. You know, last week I mentioned that a friend of ours, Don Johnson, was in the band here. And Don had bought a car from us about 2 or 3 months ago. So, Don, how about you come on in and just tell the folks what you like about Metropolitan. Hi, Don. Isn't he a good-looking fellow there? Johnny never shows him. I think he's afraid he'll show him up. Hey, Don, tell me, did you do any shopping around before you came into Metropolitan?
I did quite a bit of shopping, Bill.
Yeah?
And, I think I spent about a week shopping. I wish I'd have gone to Metro in the first place. I saved a lot of time.
How about money?
A lot of money, too. I saved about two or $250 off that car.
No kidding. Well, right. You see, it pays to shop, but it pays to come to Metropolitan, too.
And another thing about Metro, they have a salesman. His name is Leonard Harding.
Yeah.
And he'll come out to your house and wake you up and take you down.
Well, I know that. He's a real good boy.
Yeah, he's a nice fella.
I know that you're going to get another car from us, and I know that you're going to do just as well in the next one as you did in the last one.
We hope so.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.
Okay, we'll see you. Come on in tonight, this week for sure, to Metropolitan Ford, the big city dealer with the neighborhood touch, open every night, Saturday and Sunday included, till at least 11 o'clock, right there in the corner of Pico and Figueroa, downtown Metropolitan, Los Angeles. Hope you'll see you down there this week. And now, J.O.
Thank you, Bill.
You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM.